Thank you, Mrs. Kanner, for that overly kind and generous introduction. One of Mrs. Kanner's, one of many amazing sons-in-law recently made a siyum on Shas and mentioned in his speech there that only years into marriage to her daughter did he feel finally comfortable, did he build up the confidence to give a Dvar Torah at a Shabbos table in front of Mrs. Kanner. So I share in the same hesitation, but I appreciate your kind introduction. And Bishus Rabbi Levitt, who couldn't be here today, but we're so grateful to welcome to our community. And Shimi and your amazing administrators, your teachers, you know that you're so lucky, all of you, to go to such an extraordinary school with teachers who so passionately are devoted to you, your growth, your well-being, your future. Our community is indebted to them. You are indebted to them. And it's wonderful to have the opportunity to spend some time with you this afternoon. There are approximately 7.5 billion, with a B, people on Earth today. Even as connected as we are online and offline, no matter how wide our web is, most of us only interact or overlap with a tiny fraction of that number, a little sliver. And we make the mistake of extrapolating from our little experience out to the whole world. And we assume that the entire world operates based on what we've come to experience or know. But the truth couldn't be any more different. And so instead of thinking about it as 7.5 billion people, for a moment, as an experiment, let's turn the population of Earth, let's think about it as a small community of only 100 people. We'll keep the same proportions, the same ratio, the same percentages, and if the whole world, if all Mother Earth were a village of only 100 people, it would look something like this. Of the 100 people in our village, 18 don't have electricity. 14 can't read or write. 33 are Christian, 21 are Muslim. How many you think are Jewish? Less than one. One, we'll round up. 30 always have enough to eat. 50 are malnourished, and 12 are unable to read. One has a college degree. Only 12 owns a computer. 8 have an internet connection. 6 own 60% of the village's wealth from all the village. 21 of the 100 live on $1.25 a day or less. So my dear friends, the world is not at all the way that we picture it or think about it. The majority of the world and its population, their lives look almost nothing like ours. If you keep your food in a refrigerator, if you have clothing hanging in your closet, if you have a bed to sleep in and a roof over your head, if you went to college or you're going to college, you own a computer with internet, if you make more than $1.25 a day, you're not just like everybody else. You are, in fact, one of the lucky few in the entire world. The Mishnah says, and from it was written, arguably the most moving and stirring part of our whole davening on the Yom Noraim. But Rosh Hashanah Kobay Olam Orun Lefanav Kivnei Maron. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah tells us that on Rosh Hashanah the entire world passed before God for judgment. Hashem looks around at the world and He evaluates. And it doesn't say all Jews, and it doesn't even say all people. It says the whole world. Every chair, every table, every blade of grass, every leaf of a tree. The whole world comes before God as He evaluates our purpose, our meaning, why we are here, and whether we are fulfilling our mission, whether He should renew our contract for another year, and what should that contract look like. And the Gemara wonders on that Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, why the comparison to B'nai Marom? What is that expression? What does that description even mean, B'nai Marom? And the Gemara offers several suggestions, which we're not going to get into today. Reish Lakish says it means like the people who traverse the elevated paths of the Meiron area. And we too will come before Hashem and we have to walk in a single file line. We don't have the luxury of blending in with our crew, with our friends, with our class, with our community, of trying to hide behind that person, you know, when the teacher's about to call on someone to read and everybody finds that person in front of them to hide behind or duck under. And come the Yom Noraim, our lives are going to be evaluated. Who are we and how do we behave? How nice, how good, how kind, how obedient, how observant are we? We're tempted to want to hide behind that person in front of us. But the Mishnah says you can't. because we pass in single file Kivnei Marom. And so Rosh Hashanah is about, on the one hand, connecting with the Tzibur. On the one hand, the formula, the strategy to triumph in Din, in judgment, is not to be so concerned only with ourselves, but to see ourselves as part of something much bigger. That's the parsha we'll read this Shabbos, the parsha we always read before Rosh Hashanah. Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem. When are we nitzavim lefnei Hashem? When we are kulchem. We are most beloved, accepted. Hashem favors us greatest when we are kulchem, when we're all together, when we're a community. But we have to remember, as much as we are devoted and dedicated to the community, the concept of community, the value of community, caring about community, but we have to remember, nevertheless, to define our personal mission. Who are we as individuals? We come as a community, but then He lines us up single file. Our merit is elevated when we blend in with the right community, but ultimately we also get evaluated on our own. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Rosh Hashanah is the birthday, not of creation. People that make that mistake all the time. Rosh Hashanah does not correspond with the first day of the 6 days of creation. Rosh Hashanah corresponds, we know, with the creation of humanity. Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Zayin, tells us that Rosh Hashanah corresponds with the sixth day of creation, when Adam HaRishon was introduced to the world. And so when we say and when we sing on Rosh Hashanah, Hayom Haras Olam, I will spare you from singing it. When we sing it, today is the birthday of the world. We don't mean the birthday of the world. The world was already an ancient 6 days old by the time we got here. But we're not celebrating the rest of the world. What we will celebrate next week, what Rosh Hashanah commemorates, is not the birthday of the world, but our birthday. The birthday of mankind. The birthday of humanity. But our birthday is different than the birth of the world. Our creation is categorically different than the creation of the world in two significant ways. And listen carefully, because this is so important to tapping in, not only to this time of the year, but I have to tell you, particularly a room of teenagers, that I can't think of a more poignant and a more important message for you at this stage of your life, as you're looking out and projecting the trajectory of your life. As you and all of us continue to look in the mirror and try to define who are we and why are we here and what are we meant to do and ultimately what legacy do we want to leave. So the first difference is that everything else was created how? We say it every morning when we daven. Baruch She'amar V'haya Olam. I have to tell you, for many generations, for most generations, we taught that, we said that. Asara ma'amaros, with 10 sayings, God created the world, God spoke, and the world came to be, but we had no idea what that meant. We couldn't even envision or picture. How could it be that you speak and something happens? In my childhood, and I'm not as old as I look, in my childhood yet, we could not have possibly imagined that you could speak and something would happen as a result. You live in a generation, that's why you're all giving me these funny looks, you can speak to your Tesla and it takes you to the destination while you're shaving or texting. You're not supposed to be doing those things, but you can speak and your oven turns on and the lights turn off. You can speak and it creates things. Hashem spoke and He created the world. And that was true for the heavens and the earth and the stars and the sea. It was true for the animals and the birds and the insects. It was true for absolutely everything in creation except for one thing. There's one thing that did not come about because He spoke. You know how it came about? Because He gave it a kiss. Much more direct than speech. Speech is from a distance. I could scream at you from across a room and you hear me, but we're not as connected than the love, the affection of a kiss. Vayipach be'apav nishmas chayim. God breathed into us and He brought us to life. It's not our topic for today. We won't speak about it now. In the senior seminar about Chevra Kadisha and Tahara, we talk about it then. But we were a lifeless being and God brought us to life. How? By taking a deep breath, so to say, within Himself, and breathing life. He did CPR. He put a piece of His breath into us. The truth is that on Rosh Hashanah, we commemorate that every year. There's a piece of God in every one of us. We may not know it. We may not feel it. Sometimes we don't feel like it. We wonder, am I worth anything? What's my life about? Why am I here? But know, and know with certainty, that if you are alive and so long as there's a breath in your lungs, there is a piece of God in you. There's a uniqueness to you. You are here for a reason. You have something to offer the world. You matter. You're consequential. You make a difference. And how do I know that? I know that because if you're breathing, then you are breathing the breath that God first put in our lungs. And how do we tell God that we know that His breath is still inside us? How do we affirm that? How do we communicate that? Says the Sfas Emes very simply. We blow the shofar. On the day that God first breathed His into our lungs, we use our lungs to produce a breath, a sound. I blow the shofar in our shul in one of the minyanim, and I can tell you, you can't blow the shofar from your voice box, from your larynx. You have to blow it from your diaphragm, from deep inside yourself. You have to draw on that original breath that God put inside us and reciprocate it back to Him. So that is difference number one. That is difference number one. Not our topic. I've told you so far about a lot of things that are not our topic, but now we're going to get to our topic right now. Because there's a second distinction, a second difference between the way God created the whole world and the way He created us. You see, everything else was created in abundance and with multitudes. Hashem created lots of trees and lots of animals and lots of oceans and lots of rivers and countless stars. He created lots and lots and lots of everything else. But when it came to the human being, how many did He create? One. At first, one. And Chazal note this when they say, Adam Nivra Yechidi. Man was created alone. Absolutely and utterly by himself. Yes, Chava came shortly after, but at creation, and not because she was secondary, it was one androgynous figure made up of both Adam and Chava, one figure, equal, split into two. At first it was one. And why? So I have a whole Sheva Brachos Torah on that. But for our purposes, why? Why did God create singularly one human being and then divide it into two and from the two create 7.5 billion people on earth today? He was capable of creating things in abundance. The trees and the stars and the rivers and the oceans and the insects and the mosquitoes. He created lots and lots and lots of them. So why, when it came to us, did He only create one? This anomaly bothered not me. It bothered the Gemara. It bothered the Rishonim. It bothered later commentaries who all try to provide a meaningful answer, to extract lessons. What can we learn from the fact that Adam Nivra Yechidi? What was Hashem communicating? What message was He giving us? That unlike the other things that were created in abundance, we were created sparingly, just one. So one opinion says, teaching us that if you're machrev, if you destroy one life, it's as if you destroyed the entire world. If you make one person feel bad, you send one person home crying, you bully one classmate, if you make one person feel insecure or unworthy, if you destroy one person, you've destroyed the entire world, because Adam Nivra Yechidi. And the second commentator say, look at it in the positive, the inverse. If you save one life, if you made one person feel good, if you helped one person pass that test, if you chose one person first on your sports team and brought them to life, if you literally resuscitated somebody or helped them or saved them, we know Amatzel Nefesh Achas, if you save one life, it's as if you saved the entire world. And a third commentary suggests Hashem was trying to keep the peace among His creations so that nobody can claim genetic superiority. All of us, no matter your ethnicity, your race, where you were born, all of us trace our origins to the same one person. It wasn't the United States of America that introduced the idea of equality of man. It was the Torah HaKadosha. It was our sacred tradition. That no one can claim superiority over anyone else. We all trace our origin to the same Adam Nivra Yechidi. We all, if you go back far enough, all have the same father. And yet another opinion, a fourth opinion, says it shows how great Hashem is. That even though He created only one person, fast forward, that one person is the progenitor of billions and billions of people. Wow. That's amazing. So those are four opinions, but there's a fifth. Rav Dessler quotes in the name of the Alter of Kelm, and it's the one I want to focus on with you. I think our generation needs this fifth answer as much or more than it needs any of the first four. And the answer is basically as follows. Last year, a parent shared with me that his teenage son had undergone an enormous transformation. The teenager had grown and matured and calibrated his priorities and had made major life choices, had a major breakthrough. And when I asked the father, your child who was immature and unsophisticated, who was impulsive and impetuous, your child who struggled in relationships, struggled to do well in school, struggled to make choices, struggled to know where they wanted to go and what they wanted to do. What was it? What made this enormous breakthrough? What made them devote themselves and focus academically? What made them a better friend? What made them happier in life? What made them have a greater sense of self-worth and self-security? What was it? And the father told me that there were numerous factors, but the biggest, the number one thing he thinks that enabled and empowered his son to make these changes was in fact something that the son, the teenager, had done on his own. And that was, while yet in high school, the teenager had deleted Snapchat from his phone. Now, I don't even know, is Snapchat passé by now? Still on Snapchat? None of you, of course, but you all know somebody on Snapchat? Okay. So why was that so significant? And I'm not here to rank on Snapchat. If you know me at all, you know that I have a decent social media presence and try to use it to spread Torah. So I'm not here to give you the lecture, everyone take out your phone that you're not supposed to have here and delete the apps that you're not supposed to have. That's not what I'm here to do. That's not what I'm here to do. Why am I telling you this story? Why am I telling you this story? Because if you're on Snapchat, as you know, and many of you know well, if you're on Snapchat, you're not just living your life. You are living the lives of your network of friends and everyone you know simultaneous to your own in real time. Every alert, every ding, every buzz to tell you where they went on vacation, what they had for dessert, how they're doing studying for their test, what joy, what disappointment, what they're wearing, where they are, who they ran into, what celebrity they met. You're not just making the decisions you need to make. You're not just carving your space in this world. If you are on Snapchat, you are living the lives of everyone you know who's on Snapchat with you simultaneously. And whether you're doing it by choice or not, consciously or subconsciously, inevitably and invariably, you can't help but compare your life to theirs. And I'm not the one telling you this. There's countless research that's coming out now that shows that a consequence of being present in many lives at once, and not just your own, is the plague known as FOMO, the fear of missing out. And the symptoms of FOMO are anxiety and depression, insecurity, unworthiness. And the consequences of FOMO can be terminal and lethal. And so this teenage boy on his own realized that whether he was lying in his bed at home, or sitting at the dinner table with his family, at school, in the car on the way home, wherever and whatever he was doing, 24, let's call it 6, he was spending an enormous amount of his waking hours tapping through the endless updates from his friends. He wasn't really present for any conversation he was having in real life, because every alert or buzz, he had to tap it because he was so curious. Where are they? What are they doing? Who did they meet? What are they wearing? What did they eat? I need to know. I don't want to miss out. He was following their lives. And here's the thing. He was following so many other people's lives that it came at the expense of his own. And how he felt on any given day, and how he felt about himself in any given moment, were not the result of the choices he was making, of the relationships he was forging, of the conversations he was having, but rather shaped by the lives he was addictively following. And it was amazing to me, the description that when the boy deleted the app, the result, and the research confirms this, deleting the app is as powerful as an alcoholic becoming sober. An alcoholic or drug addict who walks around in a phase and in a daze, who's never fully present, and who doesn't have the best judgment, who makes poor decisions, isn't as achieving as they could be, and that alcoholic or that drug addict is able to wean themselves or gold cold turkey, and in sobriety they become a different person, getting off of that app brings a level of sobriety that's no less. Clarity, thinking, presence, mindfulness, self-awareness, everything changed. And it changed for this young man. And it provided a breakthrough that he is on his way to now living his best life. His life is radically different than what it was. Says the Altar of Kelm, our fifth answer. Adam nivra yechidi, man was created alone, unlike the rest of creation. Because we all need to know, we have to know that to fulfill our mission, to live our best life we're capable of, to find the fulfillment and the happiness that we desperately crave, we have to find the courage to live just our life. The resolve to be true to ourselves. The will to be makiras mekomo, to carve out our distinct space. The tenacity to make our mark on the world. I don't have to look like, act like, enjoy the music of, talk like, dress like, go to the places of everyone around me. I don't need to conform to everyone and everything and society. Adam nivra yechidi. I'm here to live my life, to discover who I am, what I like, what I believe, who I meant to be, and what difference I meant to make, of what my mission is, of why I woke up today. Long before Snapchat was created, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment." And so my dear friends, in this Rosh Hashanah season, that sound of the shofar is to awaken us, to arouse us from our sleep and our slumber, from our daze and our drunkenness of living other people's lives at the expense of our own. And that sound of the shofar is to waken us up, to liberate ourselves, to set ourselves free from the pressure of keeping up, of competing, of comparing religiously or financially in any aspect of our lives. It could be Snapchat, for others it's mindlessly scrolling Facebook, and others it's following what everyone else is doing, or it could be just trying to keep up with people offline. And whether you're addicted to technology, or whether even you don't know what social media is, but I imagine that's none of you, we need to stop thinking about and caring about and focusing on measuring ourselves against other people. And this new year, it's time to finally measure ourselves only against ourselves. And I want to tell you something very important. Don't be jealous of what you see online. I can tell you as a rabbi, I am very involved in many people's lives offline. And their public persona, and their face, and their Facebook, and their social media imprint often is radically, radically different than what's happening offline. What people post or choose to share represents a very small snapshot of their life. And people usually don't post their unhappy disappointments, their failures, their broken moments. So what are we even jealous of? The illusion? The mirage? The fakeness that we see all around us? If we knew the whole package that came with that picture, I mean, we know this experience ourselves. You go to Disney with a large family, and there's a lot of ups and downs that day. A lot of crying, a lot of screaming, a lot of jealousy, a lot of waiting on lines, a lot of burning in the sun. But you take that one great picture with the smile and the Mickey ears, you know, and the Magic Kingdom's behind you. And you write online, "Best day ever." And the person who didn't get to go that day sees that and says, "Why not me? That's so unfair." And they don't know that 90% of the day, you would have rather had root canal with no Novocaine than be walking around Disney World with that family. But it's that little picture that we put up, that Snapchat. So why are we wasting so much time and energy and emotion being envious and making comparisons with poor imitations and illusions? Avram Avinu is tested. The first test that we read about of his in the Torah is Lech Lecha. You know what that test was? Lech, to go. Where? Lecha. Discover your true self. Craft your own life. Don't simply conform and be defined by everyone and everything around you, by their expectations of you, by the competition. Fulfill the mission that is unique to you and the reason for which you were created. And so that is our greatest test in our generation, I would argue and submit to you, that we face now more than ever. We are bombarded by what everyone else is saying and what they have and how they behave and what they look like. And it is robbing us. It's stealing our peace of mind. It's stealing our happiness. Maybe this resonates for you. Do you know the numbers of the spike of teen anxiety, teen depression, teen suicidal ideation? It's off the charts. And it's not your fault. It's not anyone's fault. It's the fault of moving at such a fast pace that we're not stopping to think about the impact of the things that we're doing. Living other people's lives deprives us of living our own, and there's nothing more depressing than that. Comparing ourselves to the snapshot of someone's life that doesn't even represent the whole picture, and it makes us jealous, and makes us have FOMO, the fear of missing out. There's nothing more depressing, there's nothing that gives you more anxiety. Why don't I get to go, and when will I have that, and maybe I should be there? And so on Rosh Hashanah, the anniversary of our birth, not the creation of the world, but the creation of man, we remember, like Adam, that Nivra Yechidi, that we are born alone. We're not born with Snapchat in our hand. We're not born with comparing ourselves to others. That our mission and our test is Lech Lecha. Our job is to find ourselves. It doesn't say Lech Lo, go to him, be as smart as him, be as artistic as her, be as cool as him, be as... It doesn't say that. Our mission and our challenge is Lech Lecha. To go to ourselves. It's been said, just because one of you is talking doesn't mean you all have to talk during this talk. It's been said, have the courage to be different. Or at least the courtesy. It's been said that life is the most difficult exam. Many people fail because they try to copy others, not realizing that everyone has a different question on his or her paper. We all face a different test. And when we try to copy off of someone else's paper, when it's Lech Lo instead of Lech Lecha, that's when we fail. The day that we discover that we are Yechidi, the day that we discover that we are priceless, the whole world is here for us, the whole world was worth being created for us, is the day of our liberation. It's the day that we can break through and find that happiness and that calm and that peace and that joy to set ourselves free by declaring that we are Yechidi, that we come to our own conclusions and our own decisions and our own sense of style, that Bishvili Nivra Olam, that my singular aim and goal is to identify why am I here and what am I meant to do and how can I best fulfill my mission. Dating from 1664, the Isaac Synagogue is considered by many to be the most beautiful synagogue, most beautiful shul in Krakow. It was badly damaged by the Nazi occupation, but it's back in operation today. In fact, I davened there on a trip to Poland with members of our shul a few summers ago. Some of you will go there with March of the Living. The Isaac Shul is named for its founder, Isaac Jacobowitz. And the story in the shul goes, true or not, the story is told that Rabbi Isaac had a dream about a treasure hidden in Prague, near the Charles Bridge. He immediately went to the city where he found the bridge guarded by a soldier, and he waited until the soldier would leave. But, lo and behold, the soldier was there regularly and constantly. And Rabbi Isaac came back the next night, and the one after that, and the one after that, but the same soldier, or a rotating soldier, was always there. So finally the soldier approached Rabbi Isaac and he said, "I see you lingering around the last few nights. What do you want? Why are you here? What are you waiting for?" And Rav Isaac felt, what did he have to lose? So he told him about his dream and his search for the treasure. And the soldier laughed and he said, "Only a naive fool would come so far for a dream. Do you know that I myself kept having a dream? I had a dream that in a house in Krakow there's a Jew named Isaac, the son of Jacob. And that there's a treasure hidden underneath this furnace. But what do you think, I'm a fool? Just because I had that dream I went to Krakow? Of course not. After all, every second Jew is named Isaac, and every third is Jacob. So what are you, a fool, to pursue this dream?" Rabbi Isaac thanked him and returned home to Krakow. He dismantled his furnace, he found the great treasure. He became one of the wealthiest citizens of Kazimierz, and he founded the magnificent shul in Krakow. My dearest friends, sometimes like Rabbi Isaac, we have to go far away, straight from ourselves, just to discover that the greatest and most precious and valuable fortune is in us all along. The answer to your happiness is not the next shopping trip to the mall, or the next update to your technology. It's not even doing better on the SATs or improving your basketball or soccer skills. The answer to your happiness is not outside yourselves. It's in you. Because you are a yachid. You are a true treasure. A unique gift worthy of the whole world being created just for you. Answer the questions on your test. Don't copy from someone else's. Be true to yourself. Lech lecha. And you will find the greatest wealth of all. Thank you.